I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about ways that we can stretch food so that it feeds still more people, and particularly people who need healthy food the most. We're going to talk about food rescue. My guests are John Williamson, who is the Executive Director of Food Rescue, Nora Spitznagel, who is Director of Programs for Second Helpings, Marion County, Nikki Henson, who is Principal of New Augusta South Elementary School in Pike Township, which is a pilot school for food rescue, and Lindsay Hill, past President of Indiana School Nutrition Association and Director of Nutrition Services for South Madison Schools. To join the conversation, please call us at 866-476-3881, email nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about food rescue today on No Limits. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are John Williamson, who is the Executive Director of Food Rescue, Nora Spitznagel, who is Director of Programs for Second Helpings, Marion County, Nikki Henson, who is the President, or Principal, excuse me, of, they probably think you're the President, Nikki, it's okay, the students do, Principal of New Augusta South Elementary School in Pike Township, which is a pilot school for food rescue, and Lindsay Hill, who is past President of the Indiana School Nutrition Association and Director of Nutrition Services for South Madison Schools. Welcome to all of you. It's good to have you here.
Thank you. John.
Well, I'm going to start first so that we help. I like to start out by establishing kind of a baseline here and give people a definition of what we're talking about when we say food rescue. Most people, I think, understand that, but I always like to, you know, when I teach a class, I always ask a question and tell my students, okay, if you don't understand and you want me to elaborate, avoid eye contact and look down to the floor. And I'm always amazed at how many eyes shoot down so that they get the explanation. John, can you give us an explanation of food rescue?
So, John, 1 in 6 people are food insecure in our country, while 40% of our food is wasted from farm to fork. So food rescue basically is the safe transport of surplus perishable food to caring agencies like Second Helpings and food pantries that they serve. That's the simplest definition, I guess, that we could say.
So what and how much of that, when we say 40% of it, what happens to that 40% that disappears, Nora?
Well, hopefully Second Helpings is rescuing a lot of it, as is food rescue. But it's either food that maybe we're hearing a lot about, you know, food that maybe isn't pretty enough, that people think it's not good, or people are over-purchasing or over-ordering, and those are the kind of things that we can get. Or it's just being left in the fields, that it's not being harvested at all.
So there's
many ways so that it can be.
The famous quote in the food waste space is that we don't have a food supply problem, we have a food distribution problem, because we're losing it at all these different places of the food supply chain. So what Food Rescue does and what Second Helpings does as well, we focus on basically that commercial aspect of getting it from restaurants and schools and grocery stores and places like that, where otherwise it would end up in landfills where it produces methane gas that's 21 times more harmful to the environment than CO2. So we're not only feeding children and families in need with Food Rescue, but we're protecting our environment at the same time. So you've kind of got a double win situation.
Yes.
With Food Rescue.
And Nikki, obviously you're here because there are children in many school systems who fit into that food insecure or aren't getting enough healthy food. How many of the students in your school would you say that applies to?
I would say at my school probably 50% of our students could possibly fall into that category of, you know, needing food or being food insecure.
And is that... Well, one of the definitions I think we often use is how many of the students in your school are on free or subsidized.
Right,
lunches?
I would say a little over 50%.
A little over 50%, and you know, this is not exclusively a Pike challenge, is it, Lindsay?
No, absolutely not. We are in Pendleton, Indiana, and what we've seen as a food service director, you know, a problem that's been around for years, that, you know, for whatever reason, the children might choose something on their lunch tray that day that either they don't have time to eat it or it's not their most favorite item, and they end up not eating it, and instead of it going into the trash, it's able to be rescued and used by families that need it. So it's been a great success for us.
And this did not take long. We've gotten an email question from a listener, and I'll throw this one to both Nikki and Lindsay. Says simply, I hope that someone brings up Todd Rokita's bill to restrict eligibility advances to school lunch programs. I figured I had a little private wager that we weren't going to make it 5 minutes, and I won my bet with myself that that question would come up. I suppose the question would be whether or not this bill would have an effect on the food rescue program. Lindsay, Nikki, which one of you wants to take a crack at that first? I'm assuming, well, I can see the body language of those in the room. Everyone wants a piece of it, so we'll let everyone say something, but I'll start with Nikki.
And I just briefly read about that proposed bill earlier today, and it just made me think about one thing with our students. We're always trying to make sure that they have everything that they need from 9 a.m. until 4 p.m. And any time that I might possibly have a child who is experiencing any type of behavior struggle, I try to answer four questions. Are they hungry? Are they angry? Are they lonely? Or are they tired? H-A-L-T, halt. And so to limit the food that is offered to our children, because in Pike, we have the universal breakfast. So everyone receives breakfast. And the more we talk about food rescue, everyone receives breakfast. And then for the lunch aspect, that we just have to make sure that children have everything that they need. And we're not only in Indiana asking our teachers and our administrators to educate children to meet the standards, but to limit their nutrition or to even to think about limiting their nutrition, which helps them function. I mean, because most times I make sure children have something to eat for breakfast and lunch to make sure they can get it through the day so that they can think and pass all the standardized tests. So that opens up a whole, I know that's not the focus of our conversation here today, but I know that we'll just really get behind that, many educators and parents and hopefully other legislatures, just to make sure that children have what they need, all of the children. Because even with our breakfast, I make sure that they're eating it in the classroom, because sometimes we don't know if this is the last meal that they had, the first meal that they've had since they left our school yesterday. So that's, yeah.
Lindsay, and I'll share. Long ago, I was a volunteer at IPS School 44, which is at 21st and Sugar Grove. At the time, I don't know what the numbers are now, but they were north of 90% on the free and subsidized lunch and program. And I remember going to that school. I helped with playground duty, basically, and organized kickball games and that sort of stuff. I remember coming back after breaks and seeing those kids just attack the food, and you could tell they hadn't had a whole lot to eat when the time that the school was out. And it's not like the food was particularly good. I mean, let's be honest here. But they were that hungry that they just absolutely devoured it. Do we underestimate, Lindsay, in this, the effect that hunger and this kind of food insecurity can have on the development of our children?
I would say from the school nutrition community, we certainly don't underestimate that, because we witness it firsthand every day with these kids. I mean, just like you and Nikki both said, I mean, it's perfect. I couldn't have said it better myself in terms of how important we think our role in providing what we think is actually very tasty food these days.
Well, as I say, I placed it. It was 20, 25 years ago. A lot has changed since then.
No offense taken. But we want to provide the healthiest, most tasty meals possible to the kids, to all the children, especially those that need it the most. That's our mission.
And I'm going to give Nora and John a crack at this. Todd Rokita's bill, good idea, bad idea, Nora?
Not being an educator and haven't really read it yet, but I know that we are sending many of our 4,000 meals every day to after-school programs and places like the Boys and Girls Clubs, knowing that a lot of those children might not be eating dinner. So I would assume that the same thing would be true for lunch if they're not able to get it at the schools.
John, you get the final thought on this.
I think what I feel comfortable saying is that there was food waste before this bill, and there's going to be food waste after. And what our focus is that we need to be making sure that we are making sure that food doesn't end up in a landfill. So we don't want to give the impression that if this bill were passed one way or the other, that there wouldn't be any food waste for anybody to preserve.
That the problem's still going to be there one way or the other.
Because the children are mirroring the 40% that they're seeing their adult counterparts doing. So they're no different than us.
We are talking about food rescue here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Barry has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Barry, welcome to the program.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing well. What's on your mind?
Well, I have I have one comment and one question. My question is, the Second Helpings promotes that they've rescued all of this food, but we've had to use pantries here in Hamilton County, and there are poor people here in Hamilton County, believe it or not, and we don't see any of this food from Second Helpings, I don't think, not at the food pantries. That's my question. My comment is that you wouldn't have to go to very many Kroger stores and look in their dumpsters to see a couple dozen fried chickens and other packaged dinners that they've thrown out within the last hour at dinner time. And, I mean, I don't take them because it doesn't look appealing to me. But that is just an immense amount of food waste that local grocery stores are just constantly throwing away. Why aren't they keep talking about the new head of Gleaners is going to be coming from Kroger. Why aren't they talking about the current waste that they're throwing away? Forget about all the plastic packaging that's going into landfills. The food might decompose. This plastic is just there forever.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Spirit.
Oh, good. And if I can answer both of them, I think. Kroger is a very generous donor to us and to Gleaners. If the meat doesn't sell on their woohoo special, they'll put it in the freezer and we'll come and get it. I think those things that you're seeing in the dumpster, Barry, are probably things that have exceeded the time and temperature limits. We're very food safety conscious. But yeah, there's that fine line of how much you prepare. And then we are sending prepared meals into Hamilton County. We're at the Boys and Girls Club. We're at a senior center and a couple of churches. But since we concentrate on the prepared congregate meals, you're probably not seeing Second Helpings food in the food pantries.
When you say that that you do 4,000 meals a day,
yes,
where does that food come from, by and large?
It comes from...
And what sort of food is
it? Oh, sure. We specialize in the perishable and already prepared foods. So from places like Kroger that we just mentioned, or Trader Joe's, Wild Oats, Fresh Market, all of those grocery stores. And then from caterers and hotels. We're picking up food from the JW Marriott when I left. So as long as it hasn't been served to the public, we can come and get it.
John, what sorts of foods can we not rescue?
You know something? To be honest with you, there's some things that we wouldn't as an organization, because we connect children and families in need with these agencies. So yeah. I'm going to let Nora kind of answer that question more specifically about the specific things that Second Helpings would choose not to,
sure.
to accept.
And I should say, where I'm trying to go, and we may not get to this until after the break, is really getting at where the greatest opportunities for finding food out of that 40% that we are losing right now. So anyhow, I'm sorry I interrupted you, Nora.
Oh, sure. Our largest donors are the wholesalers and the grocery stores. We, again, take all the food safety rules very seriously. So if something's been out on a buffet, we can't take it. We don't know how long it was out or that, you know, my nephew didn't go by and stick his finger in it. Mm-hmm. Or if we can't track that foods have been refrigerated or kept hot at the right time. But otherwise, we rescue a varied amount of things every day.
So specifically in schools, what we're focused on is the unopened and unpeeled and unwanted items from the trays of students. And that's where Indiana is unique as the leader in the United States, because we have policies from our State Department of Health and State Department of Education that allow school food recovery to occur, so much so that states like New York and Vermont are following in our footsteps. New York even has a law that's demanding or directing their Department of Education Commission to to actually write guidelines similar to what they've seen in Indiana.
Implement Indiana-style guidelines.
Yeah, with, I'm sorry.
And no, go ahead. And I think what we're going to do, we're coming up on a break here, but I want to pick up on what those guidelines are that enable us to do things better, perhaps, than other states are experiencing. If you are just joining us, we are talking about food rescue today on No Limits. My guests are John Williamson, who is Executive Director of Food Rescue, Nora Spitznagel, who is Director of Programs for Second Helpings Marion County, Nikki Henson, who is Principal of New Augusta South Elementary School, and Lindsay Hill, who is past President of Indiana School Nutrition Association and Director of Nutrition Services for South Madison Schools. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, Director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about food rescue today on No Limits. My guests are John Williamson, who's Executive Director of Food Rescue, Nora Spitznagel, who is Director of Programs for Second Helpings Marion County, Nikki Henson, who is Principal of New Augusta South Elementary School in Pike Township, and it's a pilot school for food rescue, and Lindsay Hill, who is past president of the Indiana School Nutrition Association and Director of Nutrition Services for South Madison Schools. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at wfyi, or you can do what David has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. David, welcome to the program.
Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I couldn't keep up with all the names, but thank you. This is an outstanding topic today that really needs to be addressed in Indiana. The misguided attempt by Mr. Morokita to put forth a bill, I would liken to the misguided attempt to save money in Mission Flint, Michigan, and saving money on water, then poisoning the whole city. This kind of misguided attempts to stop food waste or cause whatever he's trying to cause are just so ridiculously bad. I pray that someone stops this from going through. Well, my commentary is that I was hoping that there may be, I know we have some regulations. I do not know them specifically. I do know that in general, I walked into a Sam's Club at about 8:30, and at 8:30 they were throwing away 20 chickens, full whole chickens. So I stopped, pulled out my wallet, bought them all, and gave them away. That is there some way that we can do something about it without regulations, which I know are in place to keep us all safe from food poisoning and things of that nature, that we can make some type of changes, offer some way of businesses to be able to take this food and do something other than throw it away, even food that's packaged has a date on it and can be thrown away. So I just wonder if there's something about it. I wonder if anyone there knows about that or anything that may be in the works for it.
Yes.
And I'll go ahead and hang up and take the answers off the line. Thank you very much, folks.
Thank you for the call, David, and for the questions. And, John, actually, that sort of tees up what we were talking about before the break anyhow.
There are a number of policy issues that have really been going on for a number of years. First of all, the 1996 Bill Emerson Good Samaritan Law gives businesses the freedom to donate their food without a fear of being sued, except at a very high legal standard. So there's a safety in that regard. It also gives them tax benefits for donating. There is a bill before the Congress right now that's dealing with food labeling dates and some clarity regarding that. So there's a lot of movement in it. And then, like I said, on Indiana's front, we've got these guidelines that were written by our State Department of Education and State Department of Health that allows schools like in Pike Township to know that it's okay to do this. You're protected by the Good Samaritan laws. Those laws were brought into the Richard Russell National School Lunch Act in November of 2011, and none of the schools really know about it. So all we have really done to get our 350 schools involved that are actually in their own community, donating food to people in their own community that are unopened and unpeeled, rather than throwing them into landfills, is just pointed out these laws and these pictures and these photos and these statistics of the reality of the waste.
We've gotten a question from a listener named Crystal via Facebook. And if you want to connect with us on Facebook, you can do so at No Limits WFYI. Crystal says, love the sound of this program. I wonder, when you speak of recovering uneaten food from school lunch plates, how do you handle that food safely? By that, I mean, how can you safely share food the children may have already handled? I'll throw that one first to Lindsay.
Sure. Thanks to the regulations that John has helped put in place, we really have a good blueprint for schools to handle this safely. In our schools, we hold the food. If it's cold food, it's held under the limit in which cold food should be held. And we're making sure that we're always constantly moving it to a cooler. We're keeping it separated from the rest of the food supply because we don't want to serve anything in the schools that's already been served once. We're also only rescuing items that are prepackaged or unopened, just so we can be sure that, you know, somebody didn't do anything with that food before we're able to donate it. So those are the major precautions that we take.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Lynn, and if you'd like to reach out to us by email, you can find us at nolimits at wfyi.org. Lynn says, I work for a race team, and we have catered food every day during the month of May. We have tried to donate the remaining food, but second helpings won't take it as it's not individually packaged. Are there ways they could hand that off to you?
We get a lot of not individually packaged food. I'm happy to try to reach out to her to solve it. But it might be that it's been out on a buffet and out for the public, I'm guessing, is the issue if it's in a suite.
And Lynn, I'll tell you what, given that nature, if you wouldn't mind sending us an email letting us know that it's okay for us to tell Nora your contact information so the two of you can connect and see if there's a way to save that food.
Perfect. Thanks, Lynn.
Certainly. We are talking about food rescue here on No Limits. Well, we've gotten an email from a listener named Marion who says, in any discussion of food rescue, it is vital that we acknowledge the well-documented yet denied fact that adapting a wholesome plant-based diet is not only the healthiest option that can be made, but the best way to protect the environment and achieve cruelty-free nutrition. It is so ironic that we talk and talk about feeding the hungry, and yet our rural communities are being devastated by the government-subsidized, relentless increase in livestock production and the effort to deny home rule in the construction and expansion of confined animal feeding operations. I recommend anyone concerned about food rescue to read the China Study and watch the movies Plant Pure Nation, Food Incorporated, Fresh Cowspiracy. We must address the abuses of the agricultural establishment or we are nailing Jell-O to the wall. So, Marion, if I may, Marion's a regular listener, take some liberties with your email here and ask, are there guidelines? I mean, are there certain kinds of food that you don't attempt to rescue simply because it doesn't have the kind of nutritional value that you want children to have, school children to have? Nikki, I'll throw that one your way.
Wow. Well, this is new for us, and definitely, like John has mentioned before and Lindsay has mentioned, we are rescuing the food that is uneaten, it's unpeeled, it's unopened. So say, for instance, this morning, if there were the cheese packets or if there were the granola bars, so that is the food that we are rescuing. And sometimes there's apples or the juice or the chocolate milk, which I've tried to keep that off of the menu for them in the morning for breakfast. But so that's, we don't have any limits. I don't know if I was the best one to answer her question.
Well, and I'll throw that. Are there certain kinds of foods, for example, that second helpings just won't accept?
We are rescuing everything possible. I would say the only thing we get too much of is bread, but that's a whole nother subject. But as much as possible, we're sending out fruits and vegetables and milk and the great yogurt and cheese sticks and things we get from the schools with all the meals that go out, not just to the children, but all of our 85 agencies.
But presumably, you know, like you're not accepting jelly beans as a rescue item. I mean, given that those have
a half life
of about 2,000 years anyway.
Right. But, we wouldn't consider that a meal for sure.
And, you know, in that process of rescuing food, I mean, how long can it stay in your hands before you have to move it on to someone who can consume it? Because these are perishable goods, right, by and large.
Our turnaround time is very quick. Generally, if we're rescuing it today, we're sending it out tomorrow. We were talking about the labeling standards, which would be great. Some things have expiration dates. Some things have sell-by dates. Some things have use-by dates. So it's all very confusing. We're always erring on the side of caution. But with all of our perishable and already prepared foods, it's quick. And we're, you know, sniffing, tasting, looking, everything that goes out.
And I believe because our food rescue initiative took off so strong, Second Helpings, at first they were just coming once a week. But right now we have pickup twice a week. And our food is immediately refrigerated in our cafeteria freezers.
Right. So. And we're keeping that chain of food safety. We're picking it up in refrigerated trucks. We're sorting it in our big coolers, keeping it refrigerated till it goes out.
How much of a dent do these efforts make in that 40% that goes to waste, John?
You know, I think
this is like a pebble in the ocean.
Yeah, here's what I think is interesting, John, is that in September of 2015, the United States Department of Agriculture released goals for us to, as a nation, reduce our food waste from 40% to 20%. So let's go back 9 years ago when Food Rescue first started. There were probably only three or four organizations that I could even pinpoint nationally that were focused on it. And now there are so many that I genuinely cannot count them all. So the food waste movement and knowledge about it, the understanding of the impact that it's having on our environment, the stupidity of ignoring children and families in need when we have all of this food waste, it is starting to really take hold of not only citizens, but our government as well. And it's actually being led by Europe, who started kind of forcing us to pay attention to it.
I think we've got Alex back on the line, and I should say, if you want to join the conversation, as Alex has done, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Alex, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I was just listening and noticed that one of your guests is the current principal at New Augusta South, and it reminded me of a story about food waste when I went to New Augusta South the first year it opened in 1995.
Oh, wow.
I had caused enough of a stink in the cafeteria line by refusing to accept a carton of milk when I purchased a school lunch because I wasn't going to drink it. But I was forced to take it and had nothing to do but throw it away. And I remember, I forget if it was then the principal, Scott Robinson or someone else, had called my mom and had her come in and talk to me about that. Yes, I have to take it. And the explanation I remember was that it was something along the lines of the government subsidies or something that you guys would not be able to get as much milk if I didn't take it. And so I'm appreciative of the turnaround there and the attitude, especially as far as you guys leading a pilot program, because New Augusta was very much a pilot program school for me when I was 10 and 11 years old.
Yes, and Alex, what's your last name? We are celebrating our...
Yeah, go ahead. Normally we don't do last names, but Alex, if you feel comfortable sharing your last name over the radio, we'll break the rules just for you.
My last name is Kubaki.
Okay, so we are celebrating our 20th year at New Augusta South, so I will be sure to let many of our teachers know that I met you today via the radio station. And if I could just say that definitely this came, the food rescue initiative at New Augusta South came out of a fifth grade classroom as they're planning Go Green Night. And this is the sixth annual year for that. Christy Wallace, one of my fifth grade teachers, she always poses a question to her students on a topic on how they can save the environment or reduce our carbon footprint. And with her doing lunch duty every day, she really posed the question. I think she approached Second Helpings the same time that Chartwell's through Pike Township approached Second Helpings on how can we look at the whole food waste. Or I think she emailed you, John. I'm sorry. Yeah. She emailed you. And so then it's really taken off. And in our first few weeks, we collected over 2,600 items. And so, Alex, I'm sorry that happened to you back 20 years ago. But please know now there is somewhere for your milk to go and someone else is getting it.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Alex.
It's extremely sorry.
That's okay. Go ahead, John.
It's extremely important to point out that prior to November of 2011, schools were not clear that they were protected by the 1996 Emerson Act. So they rightly were not allowing donations because they really didn't know that they had the legal protections to do it. So this is really relatively new. So before we kick too many schools for not doing it, it's, you know, it's new.
Well, and I guess what I'm asking, and I'm going to throw this one to Lindsay first, because it sounds like I remember, admittedly, I went to school just a few years before Alex did, but there really wasn't an option when you were going through the school lunch line to say, you know, no, don't give me that because I won't eat it. It will just go to waste. You know, and it was well-intentioned. They wanted to make sure you were trying to eat a balanced meal and track things and all of that sort of stuff. But were there rules in place like that that actually kind of contributed to the problem? And are there still some in place that we need to change so that we can deal with this much more effectively? Lindsay, I'm going to throw that one to you first.
Sure. There definitely are minimum rules as to what constitutes a reimbursable school meal. So I think it was sometime in the mid-90s, maybe when Alex was in school, that a program called Offer versus Serve was introduced. So basically, the government has a basic set of rules that say you have to have this much on your tray to be a balanced meal that we will reimburse your school corporation for, which makes sense. But they implemented these Offer versus Serve rules that allow students to decline certain components of the meal. So if you have your protein, grain, fruit, vegetable, and milk, you can decline two of those components now, which means, you know, the student's not going to plan to consume that. They do have the option now to decline it, which I believe has cut down on waste.
We've gotten a question or comment via Facebook from a listener named Cindy, and if you want to reach out to us on Facebook, you can find us at No Limits WFYI. Cindy says, I believe Wheeler Mission will take food that is not individually packaged. My employer donates leftovers from our holiday pitch-ins. Are there places that don't require that the food be individually packaged that you know of, Nora?
Yeah, and I'd like to go back to us. It doesn't have to be individually packaged, so I want to erase that idea. And there are other certainly nonprofit agencies that will. We send hundreds of meals to Wheeler Mission every day also. So donating to Second Helpings is a good chance to get their donation to go 85 different ways. But there are certainly other places that will take rescued food.
It's always very difficult to analyze an anecdotal story because you don't know all the facts. So it could be food safety issues, why it was rejected. So, you know.
Right.
And obviously you're going to err on the side of caution.
Yes.
Right. So you're not you're not going to hand people food that's likely to make them sick. We've gotten an email question from a listener named Teresa. Again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Teresa says, is Second Helpings working with the summer food programs to rescue prepackaged food that the students choose not to eat from their summer feeding program sack lunches?
Not officially. It depends upon the agency that is serving the food, whether it's a partner agency. And a lot of times, the summer servings program is wonderful, but it's limited to school children. So in many cases, like at Indy Parks, we are coming in with our meals also so that the rest of the family can be fed. So I think it's getting shared.
Are there certain ways? What are the I'm embarrassed that I haven't asked this question. What are the populations that you do serve, that you will focus on serving? Obviously school children and, you know, the summer park service and all of that. What other groups do you serve?
We have almost every emergency shelter I can think of, we send lots of meals to. That's probably our biggest chunk. 40% of the agencies we serve meals to children. And then there are senior programs. Just across the board.
We are talking about food rescue here on No Limits. My guests are John Williamson. He is the executive director of Food Rescue. Nora Spitznagel, who is director of programs for Second Helpings, Marion County. Nikki Henson, who is principal of New Augusta South Elementary School in Pike Township, heard from a New Augusta alum just a little while ago. That's a pilot school for food rescue. And Lindsay Hill, who is past president of the Indiana School Nutrition Association and director of nutrition services for South Madison Schools. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Or on Twitter @WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about food rescue today on No Limits. My guests are John Williamson. He's the executive director of Food Rescue. Nora Spitznagel, she is director of programs for Second Helpings, Marion County. Nikki Henson, she is the principal of New Augusta South Elementary School in Pike Township, which is a pilot school for food rescue. And joining us by phone is Lindsay Hill, who is past president of the Indiana School Nutrition Association and director of nutrition services for South Madison Schools. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Chris has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hi there. Good afternoon.
What's on your mind?
I have a mutual acquaintance who happens to be a farmer in Marion County. About 4 years ago, one of his contracts canceled on him, and he had 10 acres of corn that needed to be picked or was going to be plowed under. At the time, I was working with the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department. And we tried Gleaners, Salvation Army, and a handful of other places, and we were only able to get a couple small food pantries to come out. But every year, I get the same call from them: Chris, I've got a couple fields that need picked. Can you have some people come out? Do you guys have any recommendations so I don't have to watch it get plowed under every year?
I'm seeing John nod his head here. I'm not sure whether that's ruefully or in agreement, so I'm going to give him a chance to respond. Thanks very much for the call, Chris.
I think that he's just hit on one of the biggest problems that there is. It's the distribution. It's not the supply of it. And the idea that it doesn't come up at the exact same time and meet people's schedules and the availability of a semi or a volunteer capacity, it's just a big problem in the country, not just here in Indiana.
I would say the same thing. We have an amazing volunteer group, 650 active volunteers, 50 every day in the building helping prepare and deliver the food. But getting them to a field at a certain time isn't always as doable as we would like. We've looked at that through the Indy Hunger Network. There's actually a subcommittee of Grow and Glean, of the whole gleaning idea. So it's certainly something that people know is out there and that we're working on how to handle those situations.
We've all gotten a Facebook message from a listener named Vicky that takes the conversation in a different but important direction. And if you'd like to find us on Facebook, you can find us at No Limits at No Limits WFYI. Vicki says, thank you for this program and important discussion. Do any of the panelists know about similar agencies and or efforts regarding rescued food that could be appropriate for animal consumption? Along with hungry children, we also have many hungry pets. Thank you. John?
You know, it's interesting. I do a lot of research online, and Facebook is a great place to do research. And if you were to type that subject in, you might be shocked at how much you found about how people are actually taking initiatives to help pets. So while it's not my level of expertise, I will tell you it's something I've seen a lot of information on.
We've gotten an email question from a listener named Tom. And again, if you'd like to find us via email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Says, John, why are the schools not rescuing the food to be reused for free or reduced lunches? You may already have covered this. Actually, I don't think we have, Tom. And I'll throw that one to Lindsay first.
Sure. Well, the food that's rescued in the schools, there are schools that set up something called a share table, where once the food, you know, the children decide that they aren't going to eat the food for whatever reason, they might put the food on a share table or share coolers, and those tables are allowed to be accessed by children that are still hungry. And then that whatever's left from that share table will then be taken through the food rescue process to the local carrying agencies. But we wouldn't want to serve food twice in a school. We want the kids to have whatever they purchase, we want them to know that it was purchased and it was served for the first time.
And John,
yes,
those children
please.
Have eaten too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everyone eats.
Goes through the line
yes.
already.
Yes.
Are there ways though, and maybe, Tom, I may be taking some liberties with your question here. Are there ways, because it seems to me that anytime you have to transport the food someplace else, you're adding another possible way that it can be lost or become part of that 40%. Are there efforts within the schools themselves to rescue this food so that it could be used maybe a day later or for other purposes. John, you're grimacing.
It's so. Really truly a chain of custody issue, John. You know, the food service directors, and then Lindsay will probably back me up on this. They're what they're tasked to do is to serve the food to the children, not take responsibility for it a day or two later, whereas a food pantry or a caring agency, through the Good Samaritan laws, once it leaves their custody, that responsibility goes towards the caring agency, and schools are much more comfortable with that than they are managing an entire program that they really isn't funded for them to manage.
We've gotten another email from a listener named Brett, who says, "Dear John and guests, while working as a teacher for Wayne Metropolitan School District and doing lunch duty instead of writing lesson plans or grading papers, I routinely redistributed milk and other sealed food from students who were just going to throw it away to students who wanted to eat it. I was asked many times what I was doing and why. I was told to stop." And I'm guessing it is that chain of custody issue.
Correct. It's completely legal reasons that that they would not want that being done out. Is it being done across America? I'm quite certain it is, because teachers are the most kind-hearted people you've ever met in your life. And to see children and families in need, I'm sure that a lot of it has been done in the past, but not just publicized.
But for example, and I think this is getting to Brett, if a carton of milk has not been opened, you still can't reshare that or give it to another student?
I can jump in.
Yeah, please, Lindsay.
I mean, a carton of milk, it has a two-hour window of when we know that it's been at a safe temperature. So from a school, we want to make sure that we are positive that that milk has not been outside of our window. So we can make sure it's positive till it leaves our door. But from there, you know, if it's outside of our custody, we wouldn't want to serve anything to a child without being 100% positive of its safety.
So it sounds like, obviously, there are a lot of innovative attempts now to figure out ways to make sure, A, that school food does not go to waste in schools, and that we can get schools. And I should say, we had a listener who didn't want to go on the air and asked what I'm sure is an easy question for either John or Nora, or frankly anybody here, and that is, if you want to make a food donation, how do you go about doing that? What's the best way to go about doing that? Nora, you're looking the most anticipatory there,
sure.
So I'm going to go first with you.
I was counting the ways that you could donate food.
Okay.
And I'll talk about second helpings first.
Yeah.
There's several ways. If it's a larger amount, 50 pounds or more, we can certainly come and pick it up. You're always welcome to drop it off at Second Helpings, 1121 Southeastern Avenue.
And if they want you to come pick it up, how do they get in touch
They
with
can
you?
Either reach out via our website or call 317-632-2664.
And
it's extension 1111.
Go ahead and give them that number again.
Sure. 317-632-2664 and then extension 111. And even if nobody answers, leave a message. We're very good at, a lot of times we're on the road and calling back into that.
And if are there ways to donate to the schools themselves directly? Or do you want to run it through an organization like Second Helpings first?
It really needs to be through a caring agency, because the caring agency has food distribution standards and food safety handling standards that the administration needs to really speak with them first. So it works best to go through those chains of processes.
Let's stay with you for a second, John. What are, we're making a dent in this 40%. Where are the other areas of great opportunity here for rescuing food? I mean, it seems to me, obviously, if we've got a guy who's about to plow under 10 acres of corn,
yeah,
that creates an opportunity. And what are the ways that we might be able to break that chain of waste?
There are so many, actually, technology companies out there that are actually working on them. One is a company called Food Cowboy that has an app for truckers, that when they go to Target or when they go to Walmart or someplace and have a shipment that's rejected due to the color or the perhaps improper shape, but it's perfectly good to eat, they will be able to go and find the food pantry instead of the landfill. We have apps that are called 0%, which we brought Raj here from Chicago, who's doing amazing things with having restaurants have an app that they just type in exactly when they have food waste, and then it's a first-come, first-serve. Whoever accepts it first can come pick it up. So there's just so many folks that are working on this. There's Lean Path that's working on with restaurants as far as how do we reduce our food waste in general, which helps the cost and also keeps food out of landfills. So just a myriad of things. And then we mentioned the gleaning thing earlier at the farm level.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Stacia. I'm assuming that's how I pronounce it, who says, my husband runs a catering company and loves working with Second Helpings. If you haven't already done so, can you address how food service providers in the Indy area can get involved with Second Helpings and how you address chain of custody liability issues when it comes to leftover items? Are there things that people could put into practice to make sure that this food will be reusable? Nora, I'll start with you.
Yes, that's a great question. Thanks, Stacia. The main thing is the time and temperature, either keeping the hot food hot or chilling it until we can come and get it. That's the biggest thing, the time and temperature rules. Real basic things, if it's been out for the public, like I said, we can't take it. But for all of us that have worked in food service know that there's lots of food that's waiting to go out if needed that we can get. And then we pick it up. We try to make it as easy as possible. We send the tax receipts, mm-hmm. lots of warm and fuzzy feelings, and knowing that they're helping to feed thousands of people each day.
What are, in terms of providing the right kind of nutrition for the children in our schools, I'm going to throw this to Nikki and Lindsay. Where are the areas of greatest need, would you say? I'll start with Lindsay on that one, but I want to hear Nikki's thoughts as well.
Areas of greatest need in terms of?
Their nutrition, the kinds of food that if that we're going to rescue. I'm assuming we could make some of these efforts a little targeted.
Sure. I'll say that from our perspective as a school nutrition director, we're very proud of the food that we're serving to kids. We're very proud of the fruits and vegetables and the fresh produce that they're getting. The feedback that we've heard from the caring agencies that we are now working with is that they're happy to get some of this very healthy food into their supply chain. So that's something that makes us very proud. And we just hope that in terms of fruits and vegetables, I have children myself, and I'm sure you all do too. Fruits and vegetables can be a daunting task to get children to enjoy. So it's one of those things that the more they see it, one of these days they'll try it, and hopefully they'll eventually eat it. So I would say that's our biggest challenge in terms of what foods we want to see the kids consuming that maybe are the most challenging.
I would agree with Lindsay. You want to make sure that they have fruits and vegetables each and every day. When I was doing lunch duty, I always said make sure you have a fruit and or a vegetable because they can have either one. And like you said, our food company, Chartwell's, they do sort of introduce them to different, like there was like a bean corn vegetable that was not anything familiar for the students, but like Lindsay said, the more we can expose it to them, one day they'll try it, one day they'll enjoy it, but really trying to get the fruits and vegetables into the students. And then when we go back to the food rescue, unfortunately, like yesterday, several of the apples were going into the bin, and I kept saying, oh, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. Aren't you sure? Are you sure you don't want that apple? So the more you just keep telling children and keep exposing them and encouraging them to eat fruits and vegetables, that's definitely, what they need as well as adults. We all need several of those a day.
So we're getting close on time here. And, obviously, as we've emphasized, we've made some progress. There have been some changes in the law. Indiana actually is one of the leaders in this fight. But if there were further changes that we could make in the system, one concrete thing maybe that we could do that both would prevent, more food from going to waste and also get it in front of presumably children and other people who need it the most, what would that change be? Lindsay, I'm going to start with you.
Oh, gosh. That might be a better question for John to answer, actually.
Well, I want everyone. So I'm going around the horn on this one. Terms of how you see it, because you all are working on this problem from a slightly different vantage point.
Sure. I mean, in terms of the waste in schools, it's just what we already discussed, that children's eating habits and people's eating habits in general aren't always balanced. So the more that we can educate the public and children about what a healthy balanced meal looks like and expose them to that and have them actually try it, the more hopefully the food will actually be eaten instead of distributed into the waste. The other issue then, just like John said, is it's a distribution problem. So from a school standpoint, schools have always wanted to do programs like this. We've always wanted a place to see our work, you know, to see our work go in the trash isn't a very good feeling. So to see it go to people in need has been a very positive morale boost for, I guess, schools. And I guess, I lost my train of thought.
Well, I could throw it to John because you did cue him. So I'll let him pick up the baton here.
It dovetails a little bit about what Lindsay said. Honestly, it's genuine awareness. I mean, Europe really changed the problem through a national awareness campaign. And we've started. We've got some legislation in Congress. We've got the decree from the USDA. But we need to care more about this issue because it's not correct that we are ignoring children and families in need and harming the environment simultaneously. It's ignorant, and we should be better than that as a country.
Nikki.
You said what
one
changed?
One concrete thing that would make it easier or better in terms of solving this problem. And since you, like Lindsay, are also in a school situation.
And like John said, the awareness, because unfortunately, I'm embarrassed to say, before Ms. Wallace, my fifth grade teacher, brought the idea to me probably back in March, we're like, duh, why haven't we ever done something like this just to rescue our food? So I think the awareness and the more that we can do to let other schools know that this opportunity is there. And then with second helpings, you know, I'm trying to link them up to some of my community organizations and through my church. So I think it's just awareness and pulling all the pieces together. Just awareness. I think, like John said, awareness.
Okay. And Nora, you've got probably about 30 seconds to have the last word here.
Because I'm going to echo what everybody else said. Okay. Awareness and perception of what rescued food looks like. I think education. We had a daycare teacher call us a couple weeks ago that we had sent plums, and the kids were asking what kind of candy it was because they'd never seen plums before. Mm-hmm. So just the more that we can expose these kiddos to different foods, the
to better. To getting them so that they understand exactly how food comes. I remember talking about how you should eat food from, you know, each color group or whatever, and a kid once telling me, well, eat a bag of Skittles every day. Doesn't that take care of it for me? I'd like to thank all of you. I'd like to thank my guests, John Williamson, Nora Spitznagel, Nikki Henson, and Lindsay Hill, for what has been an absolutely fascinating conversation. Given the number of calls, emails, and other questions we got, I hope you'll all come back and talk with us about this again. Will
you? Absolutely. Anytime.
We would love to have you. Also like to thank all of our listeners for what have been some really, really great questions. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood, and board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Cerzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.